And our special guest tonight, David Hagberg, as we talk about his visions of the future, his work, Abyss. Back with David and more on Coast to Coast AM. David, as we discuss, what's the premise of Abyss?
Abyss. Pretty much what we're talking about, except I got to add one more thing.
All right.
I mean, this is such a complicated subject. Like, the whole business of the grid was complicated, the business of increasing carbon dioxide and all that. So I got to add one more complication, and then everything else will become clear, because I'm talking about a Pearl Harbor, upcoming Pearl Harbor here, sort of thing. What's happening is somebody invented these, what do they call, financial exotics. Among them are derivatives, hedge funds, credit default swaps, things like that.
Like the mortgages, right?
You like the mortgage, yeah, when they bundle mortgages. But a derivative is nothing more, and this all ties into what I'm going to talk about, if you bear with me for a minute.
Right.
A derivative is nothing more than a sort of an insurance policy. It's as if I were to insure my next-door neighbor's house for $250,000. Even though I didn't own the house, the neighbor didn't owe me any money, I had no interest in that house. I had no underlying interest. I still could insure that house for $250,000. So if it burned down, I'd get the $250,000. I wouldn't have to rebuild the house.
Not your neighbor. You would.
I would.
All right.
Now, six other investors could also insure the same house for $250,000. Even though they weren't dealing with me, they weren't dealing with the neighbor. So if the house did burn down, it would give me a pretty powerful incentive to burn it down myself.
Yeah.
Seven of us would each collect $250,000 on this one house.
On the one that was never going to be rebuilt.
That's right. And the insurance company would lose all this money. They've got to pay out, a million or so on a $250,000 house. And they would in turn send the loss on to their other policyholders by increasing premiums. The same thing is happening right now. I don't know, these guys, I think you're either stupid or think we're stupid. And it was the same with the real estate. There are oil fund derivatives. And they're right now, honest to God, the oil derivative positions in this country amount to more than seven times the total amount of oil reserves in the ground and the predicted future reserves that we might find.
What are they trying to buy?
Money. They're just making money on money. They're buying nothing. They're just making money on money. And so they're shifting. So if I shift a few billion dollars over another derivative position, somebody's going to have to buy that, pay for that derivative, and I'm going to get the money. I'm a hedge fund or a derivative fund manager. And the fact of the matter is, it's like a Ponzi scheme. Sooner or later, we'll run out of oil, these derivative positions will come due, and somebody's going to have to pony up seven times.
They don't have the money.
Oh, no, they would bankrupt the entire planet. So that's the game we're playing it. Now, George, if you had a couple of trillion dollars at stake, more than chump change, and somebody took a run at your position and tried to stop you or tried to sidestep you to make your position worthless, you would fight back.
You have to fight back.
You'd have to fight back. And a lot of these guys, they're 35 or 40 years old, they say, well, I'm not going to fail and go to prison and for the rest of my life, or if I'm 60, I'm not going to end up like Madoff for the rest of my life in prison, so I'm going to do whatever it takes to hold my position. So here comes, now we got the derivative thing. Here comes what I think would be a Pearl Harbor. If we push just the one thing, just all electric cars, if we can perfect the batteries and we can actually go to plug in at our house overnight and get, let's say, 200 or 300 mile
right.
range.
Something reasonable.
Yeah, something reasonable. Not 60 or 70 with a gasoline engine, but purely electric power. What that would do would devastate some of these oil derivative people. So the idea is we don't want to produce cheap, clean electricity. They don't want us to produce cheap, clean electricity so that we're just talking one segment, so that our cars will run on electricity. It is very important to these derivative fund guys. So it's not the countries.
They need the price of oil to stay high.
They need the price of oil to be high. It'd be great to have $25, $30, $40 a gallon for gasoline, but that would be cutting their own throats. They need it around $4, $3 or $4, and people don't worry so much about alternative energy. We'll pony up $3 or $4. We'll get slightly more efficient gasoline.
You go higher than that, we got a problem.
And we got a problem. So the whole idea, that's why it's complicated. The whole idea is to keep us using gasoline or diesel to run our cars and our trucks and everything like that. And if we go all electricity, it's going to hurt their position badly. So how do we go all electricity? By producing cleaner electricity, by more nuclear power plants, by new innovations in coal, and they're doing a book about clean coal, how to convert coal into methane by using microbes. At any rate, so if this is Al-Naimi, the Saudi Arabian oil minister, Warren Bush, the original George Bush, watch out this alternative energy for exactly that reason. So here comes Al Qaeda right now, is linked with all this. The new Al Qaeda after bin Laden is gone, they are right now in Pakistan. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they had the help of the Pakistani ISI, the intelligence.
Right, either way.
They're teaching these young suicide bombers how to attack nuclear power plants. How to destroy or how to disable.
Well, and that was a concern after 9/11 that they were going to fly into the towers of nuke plants. Remember that?
Yeah, that's not going to work, though. The concrete containment domes on a nuclear plant are
pretty strong.
Pretty strong. The airplane would crash, do some damage, but not release any nuclear material. No, you go into a control room. You get into a control room, which is pretty easy to do. There's no real, like, armed guards or things with machine guns guarding these things. You get into a control room, kill the people in the control room pretty easily, and disable what's called a scram panel, which is what, if something goes bad, the reactors would shut down. If you destroy the scram panel and the reactors can't shut down, they'll go into or be moderated. They'll go into a runaway mode and they'll melt down just like Fukushima over in Japan.
We should have troops stationed around every nuke plant.
And not only just the control center for each nuclear power plant, have that hardened. In Abyss, in this book I wrote, I've got a terrorist doing just that. He gets inside, and this guy's very sophisticated. He was South African self-defense force, and he's very sophisticated. And they've got an Al-Qaeda kid who they took as a kid, and they trained him in all these nuclear power plants.
Are they all suicide potential people?
Yeah, they pretty much are, and then the reason being was explained to me by somebody who knows more about this than I do, that how do I put this easily? There's a greater belief, a more firm belief,
conviction
in the hereafter, if you will, as in this country. Here we go to church and we do all that, but we don't have that fervent belief that a lot of Muslims do. And when they die, especially if they die a martyr, they are going to paradise right now, no purgatory, and they're going to have what is
72
virgins,
72
virgins. It sounds pretty good to me, actually. And so they're willing to do this because they're, you know.
I think one or two's enough, don't you?
Yeah, one or two. Well, I don't know. When you're up in paradise, maybe you have these superpowers. Who knows? And I'm not making light of this because consider a lot of these people come from slums where the only clean water is dirty water. They're not enough to eat. They're not educated.
They don't have jobs. They don't have money. They don't have anything.
There's no future.
No future.
There's no future. And Al Qaeda, one of the reasons they were so successful, especially at the beginning, is they'd take a kid or a young man from some slum or ghetto and say, strap on this suicide vest, go kill yourself, and we're going to give your parents, your family, $50,000 cash money, American $100 bills.
Which they probably didn't do.
Oh, no, they did do it.
Did they do that?
Yeah, because otherwise the word would get around, well, I'm dead and my parents aren't going to get anything.
Yeah, so,
yeah
they did
pass out the money.
Stiffed, literally.
Yeah. So what happens is the opening shots of this, and I call it a Pearl Harbor, the opening shots of this energy war, and the only reason for the energy war ultimately is to protect trillions of dollars worth of derivatives, so it's all the fat cats doing this stuff. It will be a strike on one or two nuclear power plants to make nuclear power unpalatable. Like in Germany, since this Japanese thing in Germany, they're going to, within 20 years, they're going to close down all their nuclear power plants.
Yeah, they want out.
They want out. And if you dumped a couple of our nuclear power plants and spread some radiation around, worse than Three Mile Island, worse than Chernobyl, you would find a public backlash against nuclear energy. Right now we have, there's 104 plants online in the United States, and we've got 30 in a permitting process right now. Those permits would dry up. Of the 104, I think fully a third of them are due for re-permitting, to allow them. That would go down by the wayside.
Well, what percent, by the way, David, these 104, what percent of the energy do they give us?
Not huge. I think it's in the range of 18 or 20% because coal produces 47% of our energy. That's the big
one right now.
But it's a significant, take 5% away. That's a significant amount of electrical power that's not going to be sent to this incredibly shaky grid to begin with. And so the whole idea of electric cars would become less and less palatable because electricity prices would absolutely skyrocket. Right? So we'd have to keep using gasoline and oil. That's just a start. The whole idea is to stop using, just this one segment, stop using electrical vehicles. So let's hit, we talked about those transformers. Let's hit three or four or five key transformers. Have you ever seen armed guards or even a chain link fence around these big high power lines that go across the country?
Nope.
So they're vulnerable. Take a high power rifle, sit back a few, 100 feet, a few hundred feet. So you're not going to get
electric. Snap them.
And snap the insulators. The lines will come down.
By the way, you're not saying anything that some terrorist hasn't already thought of, right? I don't want people to say Nostradamus here is giving people ideas.
Yeah, right. I hope that he'll not. Although I was on some radio show at some point a number of years ago and talking about all these things.
Probably ours.
It might have been, but somebody called us, the call-in show. Somebody called in and said, it's very good, Mr. Hagberg, that you're predicting this, you're predicting that. And why don't you ever think about writing a love story? So all on one day, coordinated, we're going to take out a couple of nuclear reactors to make nuclear power unpalatable. We're going to hit a few insulators, take down a few power lines, not a lot, but some coming into New York, some coming to LA to give us some blackouts and the like to make electricity in the public's mind. All we have to do is get the public's perception.
With the idea that they're going to die, right? The individuals.
That they're going to die, that electricity is too precious to use for automobiles when we have gasoline at $3 or $4 a gallon. I mean, it's gasoline's been good for my father, my grandfather. It's good enough for me. And sooner or later, we'll get electricity, and Christ, oil's not going to run out for 100 years. And if you listen to the oil companies, they say that's at present technologies. We're finding more and more oil. We're going to dig oil, drill for oil in the Arctic. We're not even talking about methane hydrates, which would kill us all real quick. We're going to do all these things. So, yeah, we're going to run out of oil, and there's going to be a problem, but it ain't going to be a problem for at least 100 years. And that's what this energy war, as I talked about, is going to be a different kind of war than anything we've ever seen before. It's going to be a war like Hitler. He wanted prestige, but he also wanted to bring all the German peoples together, what he perceived as, and he wanted to have a European Reich, the Third Reich, so that would be all.
He almost pulled it off, David.
He damn near did. If he had made a couple of mistakes, if he had listened to his generals, they would have hit England before we got there, and if he would have left Russia alone, he would have had all of Europe, and we would have been hard-pressed to dig him out. So the same thing here. If we take out some transformers, take out some lines, hit a couple of nukes, pretty soon the public is going to say, yeah, fine, the gasoline that we've got is fine. And they have won the war.
So are you saying not only in the novel The Abyss, but your prediction that these wars will be started by people who are looking for economic gain?
Yep. what they're not going to start, the derivative guys, and I'm going to get calls and nasty, they're going to come out, call me rotten names. They're not going to physically push any buttons, but they're going to, this is all so tied up politically and so tied up with influence, spheres of influence and all like. So these guys and gals too, who have trillions of dollars on the table, are going to make a suggestion here, make a nudge here. They're not going to actually hire a suicide bomber to take out a nuke. They're not going to actually hire a hunter or somebody or a gunman to shoot out. But they're going to make it real palatable for these people to do these kinds of
things. Well, see, I'm convinced, David, that even with 9/11, somebody hired bin Laden. Somebody higher up said, we like what you folks are doing. This is what we'd like done. We've got our own agenda.
You want to hear something scarier than that, George?
What?
What runs all this, of course, is money.
That's right.
And there are probably 100 or more different charities in the United States that still do, some of them in Orlando and Detroit and places like that, that funnel money into Al-Qaeda. And there must, well, let's see, Amnesty International said there are 10,000 different terrorist organizations alive and kicking in the world today, 10,000 of them. A lot of them are just minor and small, but this money it has been and still is funneled to people like Al-Qaeda and all these 10,000 terrorist groups. And so, yes, money is an incentive. So you got a guy like
Bin Laden.
Bin Laden, yeah. And you get a guy like that who has grand dreams, who wants to do things but doesn't have the money to do it. Just feed him money and let him go. Let his imagine. The same thing happens with my publisher and me. They say, okay, let's feed Hagberg some money. And his brain will come up with some real strange things. He'll write books. We'll all make money. And they leave the ideas to me. They just throw money at me and say, as long as the guy can eat and buy a six-pack of beer every now and then,
he's happy.
He'll be happy, and he'll produce for us. So that's the same thing. So, yes, you're right, but maybe not some specific nefarious guy meeting him in a dark alley and say, this is what I want you to do. And by the way, we're going so far afield, but this stuff is so interesting. I was reading somewhere, and it was like a letter to the editor that they're saying, well, it was just happenstance that the trade towers fell down. They didn't know. And I said, baloney. Bin Laden had at his fingertips some engineers who knew how the trade center, the buildings were built. With that kind of a steel structure, and they knew very well if they could hit the top floors of these buildings with airlines that had just taken off there, filled with fuel, it would melt the top stories, melt the structure, and the whole thing would come tumbling down. They tried the same thing in the 90s with a bomb in the basement. They figured if they could take out the underpinnings, that the whole building, in that case, they wanted the buildings to tip over.
And somebody may have had a bomb down in the bottom, too, because there were reports of explosions down there.
Yep, that's very, very possible. But these guys knew exactly what they're doing. And just as our guys, too, my prediction, see, in my books, this is not going to happen because Kirk McGarvey is ultimately going to save the day.
In your books.
In my books. But in reality, I think if this war comes, this energy, as I've described it.
Do we have a savior? In real life?
I wish there was. I don't know of anybody. Because if it comes, it's going to be short, sharp, and not so sweet, and they're going to win, at least in the short term. I mean, so let's say what I'm just predicting is true. Let's say a couple of nukes get taken out, a few insulators are shot off, and you're a dozen or a hundred, a couple, two or three transformers are taken out, and
power's out for a few months.
There's power's out all over the place.
Yeah.
It could be like a storm. It's 70 million people without power, and we're going to try to get it all back.
As fast as we can.
It could be 3 years with these transformers. Okay, so now this has happened, and it all happened over, let's say, a 2 or 3 or 4 day period, really coordinated, just bang, bang, bang. And the coordinators of it are going to be, of course, Venezuela and Iran, which can be pretty tough to prove. So what do we do? I mean, do we go nuke Caracas? Do we go nuke Tehran? Do we put boots in the ground there? How do we fight back at this?
That's the problem.
We don't.
In the old days with traditional war, David, as you know, you knew the enemy.
Yes, Well, even Rumsfeld, Don Rumsfeld, said that at a press conference right after 9/11, he said, and they were asked a question: Why don't we fight back? And how could they attack us? And Rumsfeld says, for all our nuclear weapons and submarines and missiles, not one of them could have prevented this attack.
That's true. I'm trying to be a cautionary. All right, hold on for a second, David. We're at another bottom point. We'll be right back. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with David Hagberg. You've heard what we've been talking about, and we'll be back with him with more on Coast to Coast AM. David, as we talk about the abyss, which is this fictional story that could become fact, let me ask you this, too, as well. The only thing that we disagree on is I believe in the abiotic oil theory, that this planet, though we don't have to use oil, has an abundance of it. You think it'll run out in 100 years? I think it could probably last until the end of time. Doesn't mean we should be using it, but that's the only thing we differ on.
Yeah, and oil, okay, even if you're right, let's say you are right, George, and I guess the jury's still out on that. Oil is way, way too precious just to burn to run cars.
Oh, I agree.
Because do you know that, you know what aspirin is made out of?
Partly oil.
Yeah, and all the pharmaceuticals and fabrics and things that we haven't even dreamed of yet, and lubrication. I mean, it's just incredibly stupid just to burn it to run. Even the Navy, the U.S. Navy, runs a lot of their big ships, of course, nuclear power. But now they're trying to run the smaller ships on biomass fuel, something from soybeans or whatever, you know, that
ethanol and stuff like
that. Yeah, stuff like that. And they're doing that experiment because they realize too that, and their jet airplanes running kerosene, Kerojet. If we got into a protracted war, which is not likely to happen, it's going to be short and sweet, we could be vulnerable. Our oil supplies could be vulnerable, and then we need to run airplanes and ships. So they're trying to get away. Now, that's one thing that's right, that we're doing something. We're doing something preventative. I think that the government should control derivatives, and again, rather than seven times the known oil reserves, hold it down to one. That's all you can, just whatever oil is there, you can have derivative positions on that, and that's it. You can't do any more.
Right.
The same way with the housing bubble. Had there been some decent regulation, of course a $200,000 house is not worth $500,000. Of course it's not. So some poor guy couple, they buy this house. The bank's going to give them money, obviously more money than the house is worth, like the derivatives, because everybody believes, well, a young, nice couple will barely move in and they'll sell it for $750,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, it didn't work. So that's one preventative measure. Another one. Well, we'll go back up. You asked about Abyss. Abyss is book one of probably going to end up five books about this energy wars, and it's the opening shot. I've got this NOAA scientist who's figured out a way of putting impellers, not propellers, but impellers that look like more or less shaped like the agitator in a top-loading washing machine. That's really true. That Pax Electric or Pax Scientific out in California has invented this thing. But this gal is going to put these big impellers on the ocean floor off the coast of California, Florida, and they will use the Gulf Stream, the Humboldt Current, to turn these
turbines.
Turbines to produce electricity, which will be shipped back by cable ashore, plugged into this antiquated grid. And when she finds out, they put enough of these, and they're deep under the water, so not any hazard of shipping. If we put enough of those down there, she'll not only produce all the electricity we need, but these things will change how temperature is distributed from the Mid-Atlantic north. And
it's endless.
Guy I talk, huh?
It's endless fuel.
Endless fuel. And I think it's like 1,000 times the world's energy needs could be produced in one day, just out of the Gulf Stream. But the plus benefit, which was surprising to me at the time when it came up, is that if these are going to change how much energy is pushed from one end of the Gulf Stream to the other. And that will reduce, has the potential to reduce the temperature of the mid-Atlantic by maybe a half a degree or maybe a degree. If that were the case, there'd still be tropical storms, but hurricanes would never form.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so she's come up with this. These derivative guys and all that say, no, we can't allow that to happen because all of a sudden we'd have all this free, cheap electricity. So the opening shot is somebody sabotaging a nuclear power station off the in Florida, and it's pretty easy to do.
Then it's the old adage, who benefits, right?
Yeah, who benefits, and that's to the money guys benefit. And it works except for the fact that Kirk McGarvey comes in, and he doesn't stop the thing, but he sort of mitigates it. He tamps it down. So this war's on. Now they try to sabotage this woman and kill her, and she wins the Nobel Prize, and I'm not going to give out the ending. But that's just book one. Another book, the next one coming out, is called Blowout, and it's about, okay, let's back up a second. If we go ahead and go forth with all these alternative energy projects, but not like windmills, I mean on a big, big, huge, multi-billion dollar scale, and we're really pushing fast to get clean, cheap electricity now, real soon, that's when people are going to fight back. Well, the same thing happened in World War II, that the war wasn't going all that well, so Einstein went to Roosevelt and said, look, we can make a powerful new bomb with some of the work I've done. And so Roosevelt said, okay, we're going to do this in secret. It's called the Manhattan District Project, and they developed in a few years nuclear weapons, which ended World War II. In fact, it ended World War as we know it. So the president now, in the next book, has invented or came up with a top-secret project called the Dakota Initiative. And this is science that I've only tweaked a little bit. We find out in Wyoming they're injecting microbes into coal seams, into coal veins. And the microbes, this kind of microbe, there's several hundred variety of them. They eat the coal, and they excrete methane. Well, you can pump the methane up, and you can burn the methane to heat water to produce electricity. And burning methane is a lot cleaner from carbon dioxide than coal. So now back up one more bit of science. The microbes, we have about 600 different varieties of microbes in a human mouth. And the microbes, each of them speak a different language, but they have learned to talk a common language, a lingua franca, and the purpose of that language is that they all work together to produce dental plaque. Honest to God, I didn't make this up. So now I've got the CDC scientist who has learned how you put microbes into a coal seam, and the problem in Wyoming is they eat the coal, they produce methane, and they're so tired they don't reproduce and they die and the methane stops. Well, this scientist has found a way to talk to the microbes and teach them a common language that here's what you're going to do, guys. You're going to eat coal, you're going to produce methane, and you're going to be happy, and you're going to reproduce. And so instantly we get methane, and when you can clean that up too, we get methane to burn. And the same guys, in this case as Venezuela, is their CBIN, their Secret Service. They mount several attacks on this. It's called the Dakota Initiative, and the project is out in the badlands of North Dakota, just like the Manhattan District project was in a remote section of New Mexico, and the fight is on. That's the next step, the next shot, and then the next shot after that is a book I'm working on, which I tackle the grid.
Which could be the biggest problem, I think.
Which is going to be the biggest problem. So we regulate, do some firm regulation, federal regulation of derivatives. We buy these transformers and stockpile them, either that or manufacture the things ourselves and stockpile them so that we're not vulnerable.
Wait, why don't we make them? Did we ever?
No. So far as I know, this is a specialized kind of, maybe Siemens makes them or something in Germany. I'm not quite sure. But no, we never did. And they're a specialized thing. And you don't use a lot of them.
So it's not like a job we lost or anything
no,
like that?
No, it's not like a job we lost. We don't use a lot of the things. I don't know, several hundred probably in the country.
Well, and I would guess that when they work really well and last a long time.
it lasts a long time. There has to be, they don't particularly wear it. They're not a thing like a light bulb that you change from time to time. But you build a new power station, and you have to get several of these transformers. And how many power stations have come online in the last 10 years? Not a lot.
Not a lot.
So it's a real highly specialized, so I think it should be a national goal to either stockpile these things or build the things and stockpile, keep it here. We need another Manhattan District project to produce, to come up with a source of cheap electricity, but in top secret. It could be happening right now in top secret, because if the word gets out, then the squeeze is going to be on right away, and that's going to make, you're going to be spending $25 or $30 a gallon for oil, for gasoline.
Well, you do that, you have no economy anymore.
Yeah, it would really, but you know, I hadn't heard that intriguing notion of yours, though, that we have unlimited oil yet to be discovered. I got to look at that one.
See, I believe a long time ago, a scientist by the name of Thomas Gold came up with a theory. A number of Russian scientists also believe it, that the planet as it was forming had an abundance of methane and this fuel.
I agree.
Doesn't come, they say, from fossils or dead plants or anything like that. So their theory was that the planet has an abundance. I interviewed a guy years ago, David, who believed that the oil under the ocean floor was enough to last over 100,000 years, he said.
I agree. Not oil, but I agree. There's on the bottom, on the ocean floor, is hydrates of methane. It's essentially methane gas which was abundant a couple of billion years ago, a few billion years ago. And under the great pressure, under great ocean depth pressure and the temperatures, it's like ice. And that would be enough to fuel, if we could safely get it up, that would be enough to fuel this planet for probably the next 5 billion years. Yeah. So you're right in that. The problem is, and here come on, we didn't even mention this before, because with global warming, with especially in the Arctic, where the ice cap is melting, sooner or later that's going to begin to release this methane hydrates. And that's the problem I discuss in this book, too. Methane is cleaner burning, but if raw methane gas gets into our atmosphere, it's going to be a bajillion times, I don't know if that's a real number, but it's going to be a bajillion times worse to our climate than carbon dioxide. And the problem, and nobody knows how to solve it, because one of the unintended consequences of global warming will be the release of lots and lots of methane, a massive dump of methane into our atmosphere. Well, again, it takes 100,000 years for the planet to clean up itself, starting with an ice age to lock everything back in place. So, yes, you are right, absolutely right. There's enough fuel, if we know how to use it, extract it safely, laying around to power us for forever. Now, is it practical?
That's the issue.
And you got the drift guy. Look, I'm making a bajillion dollars. I love bajillion. It's one of my favorite words. I'm making a bajillion dollars a world in oil year in oil derivatives. I don't want that to change. I don't give a damn about methane hydrates. And I don't care about wind power. I don't care about this stuff. I want the status quo to stay the same.
Well, and you also let the world think that you're going to run out. You know, the peak oil theory, much like De Beers does with the diamonds, they hold them back. If every diamond that's on this planet was released to the public, the prices would plummet.
And women at the altar would be very, very mad.
Yes, they would. So would the guys be who had to pay for it.
So would the guy. But no, see now, George, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's showing that how tremendously complicated and interlocking this whole thing is. And so wars can be started if the system is all working, if you tweak one little thing or pull one little card out of this house of cards, it could be the one card that causes the whole thing to fall.
Sure.
And I'm thinking oil derivatives, which are the bad guys, my bad guys. But I've always got Kurt McGarvey. Kurt McGarvey's going to save the day.
In your book.
In my book.
We don't have a Kurt McGarvey here.
Maybe we do. I don't know.
I don't know where he is.
I talked to some people at FBI, the cyber crimes unit, and they're very practical, down-to-earth people, but they have some pretty neat ideas, like this virus in our electrical grid system, and they don't particularly publicize the stuff they do. Although a friend over at the CIA told me, I said, "You guys sure, dropped the ball on 9/11." He said, "We sure did, David." But he said, "For every 9/11 that we miss, we stop 1,000."
Yeah, that we don't hear about, probably.
Yeah, and he said, "And if we tell you about it, then the cat's out of the bag, and then it gives the blueprint for the next guy to say." See, you asked a question too earlier, George, that you hope that the things that I imagine and write about, that some terrorist out there says, "Oh, Hagberg wrote about this. We could do this."
Yeah.
I did a book a while back, called High Flight, in which, this was well before 9/11, in which our air traffic control system was sabotaged in such a way that it would cause airlines to have problems. The airliners would fall out of the sky, would crash. And in fact, on one day at precisely, I think, 3:58 p.m. Eastern time, 13 airliners did crash. And so it was crashing airliners. But I got this from, I can't remember the guy's name now, it's been 10, 11 years, but he was the head air traffic control instructor and designer of the system. And they were doing a big program up in Minneapolis, and I went up to talk to him. I told him what I wanted to do, and he said, "Sure, that's easy." And he showed me, took me step by step, how to sabotage our air control system, and it's pretty easy. He just asked one thing. He said, "David, don't write it exactly that way. Change things so that what you're saying will not be a blueprint for somebody to say, okay, Hagberg says do it this way, and then we're going to go do it." So all my attacks in my books that McGarvey solves could be done, but not quite that way. I've changed things around.
All
I've
right.
changed the layout of a nuclear power plant so that it's not quite that way.
You had mentioned, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Although what I start out with is the truth about these transformers and the vulnerability of the grid. I can't get away from that. So in my book, my guy is going to go back to the source and be Iran and Venezuela, not as the United States attacking these countries, but my guy McGarvey individually will go after. As a matter of fact, it'll all end up with this hacker, super hacker, computer hacker in Amsterdam, who's got a copy of the virus, and he's the one pushing the button. And McGarvey will take him out, and that solves that particular problem.
You had asked about water wars.
Yeah, that's going to come next. Let's just take. I'm just starting on that. That's. Give me several books down the line because I'm just starting research. Come to find out that Pakistan gets virtually all of its water from snow melt out of the Himalayas. Right?
Once that snow goes, they're screwed.
Once that snow goes, and it's already going, it's already diminishing. India controls that water, and India and Pakistan are not pals. So India starts turning the faucet down because they need it for their own uses, and Pakistan's got nuclear weapons. They're going to fight back. Water is a heck of a lot more important than plain ordinary oil energy.
I don't know why we don't put in massive water desalination plants.
Well, it's going to be easier now. My wife and I lived in the U.S. Virgin Islands for a couple of years. Excuse me. And there's no fresh water. There's no wells or anything on that island. And so by law, and it's been a law now, but ever since people settled the Virgin Islands, long before desalination plants are possible, and it's in the tropics, so it rains quite a bit during the rainy season. They just have the drain gutters. The water rolls off the roof down a drain gutter, and they put, like we'd call a basement.
Yeah, they collect the water. Hey, David, hold on. We're coming back with some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.